I'm Aaron Henkin, and this is Midday. Can childhood trauma leave scars on our DNA? They say time heals all wounds, but science writer Donna Jackson Nakazawa would like to revise that. She says more correctly, time conceals all wounds. Her new book, Childhood Disrupted, looks at the link between adverse childhood experiences, instances of abuse, neglect, and household dysfunction, and their damaging effect on our physical and mental health as adults. The good news, your brain can undo damage. Donna Jackson Nakazawa joins us, along with Adam Rosenberg of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center, to talk with us about how we can heal ourselves and put an end to cycles of abuse. Join the conversation right after the news. Welcome to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin, in for Sheila Cast. This is your public radio, and Midday is your public forum. I want to invite you to join today's conversation at 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780, or you can join us by email at midday@wypr.org. We're going to be talking about the link between emotional and physical health this hour, the impact of childhood trauma on our physical well-being as adults, and we welcome your stories, your testimonials, and your questions. The number again, 410-662-8780. So how does our mental health as children impact our overall health as adults? If we suffer childhood trauma, abuse, or neglect, are we destined to be sicker as adults? Are we at a greater risk for not just mental illness, but also physical diseases, autoimmune disorders, and heart disease? Adverse childhood experiences. That's the term that doctors use to refer to abuse, neglect, and household dysfunction experienced in childhood and adolescence. Researchers have found that adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs as they're known, can eventually lead to physical diseases that don't manifest themselves until adulthood. This hour, we're going to talk about how children are impacted by stress, how chronic stress can change our DNA, and how the lingering effects of childhood trauma can actually be reversed. Science journalist Donna Jackson Nakazawa looks at these issues and more in her new book, Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology and How You Can Heal. She's also the author of several other books, including The Last Best Cure. That's a book about her own struggle with chronic illness. And Donna, welcome to Midday.
Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Also with us from just up the street, as a matter of fact, here in Charles Village, is Adam Rosenberg. Adam is executive director of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center. He's a former prosecutor in the domestic violence unit of the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office, and he served on Governor Martin O'Malley's Council on Child Abuse and Neglect, and also under the Hogan administration as well. Adam Rosenberg, welcome to you.
Thanks, Aaron. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Adam, I'm going to ask you to stand by a minute. Actually, why don't I start with you, Adam? Donna, I'm going to turn to you in a moment, and we'll get to the workings of your new book. But first, Adam, a few words, if you would, about the Baltimore Child Abuse Center, the services you provide, and how people can be in touch with you.
I appreciate that. You can learn more at our website, baltimorechildabusecenter.org. We are a nonprofit children's advocacy center. We're one of about 700 around the country whose purpose is to be able to provide a single-focused trauma response when children have been victims of child abuse, sexual abuse, or violence there. We've been doing this work for almost 30 years in the city in collaboration with the police department, the state's attorney's office, child protective services, and perhaps even more importantly, medical and mental health providers in the community, helping them be able to not only get answers when abuse occurs, but also be able to provide solutions to prevent it from happening in the first place. And the biggest thing we've really taken on over the last year is expanding those great services to be able to be responsive to these ACE-like situations that we're going to talk about in the next hour there. So when children have been impacted by multiple adverse childhood experiences, we recognize that we've got to have a better response there as it relates to human trafficking, community violence, or household dysfunction.
Thanks again for being here, Adam. You heard Adam use the term ACE. That is an acronym that will pop up over the course of the hour. And as you heard Adam mention, it stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. Sit tight for just a few minutes, Adam. We're going to bring you into the fold of the discussion before too long. But Donna Jackson Nakazawa, I want to turn to you and your book now. And let's start with a simple explanation of what stress does to our brain neurochemically. We see a grizzly bear or a rattlesnake in the woods. What happens in our brain?
Well, everything in our brain starts to tell us from our amygdala, tells us alert, alert, something bad is going to happen. It communicates with other areas of the brain that look at our past experiences and tells our prefrontal cortex, you know, run, fight or flight, or freeze. So you see a bear in the woods, and that bear is scary. You either, adrenaline fills your body, your arms and legs prepare you to run into the woods, or you stay frozen. That's really great. And in modern society, we live a lot on that first half of the stress cycle as if we're seeing the bear. Now, we're supposed to go all the way through the stress cycle and relax and come back to homeostasis. And that's how the stress response is supposed to work. But let's imagine a child who is caught in a situation where they're facing chronic unpredictable stress. And the bear isn't in the woods. The bear is mom or dad. And they don't know, is mom or dad going to be safe in this moment of time? What happens when that happens repeatedly? Or is my community safe? If they're facing chronic unpredictable stress repeatedly, those same stress hormones in the brain actually begin to make epigenetic shifts in what we look at as the genes that should oversee the stress response for life. So let's just use a simple analogy. Let's say that all the genes that determine how well you should respond to stress, turn it on, turn it off. In children, your genes are changed. Epigenetic shifts occur that turn that stress response on. That means more stress hormones, more stress chemicals, more inflammation. And over 20, 30, 40 years, it means adult disease.
You know, I have to wonder, it's obviously an important evolutionary response, right? But when that sort of faucet of chemicals is turned on and unable to turn off, like what does it do to the brain? What does it do to your cells, to your DNA?
Well, Yale researchers recently found changes in all 23 chromosomes in the genes that should regulate the stress response properly. Again, turn it on, turn it off. So they also found epigenetic changes in genes that determine our likelihood of developing a range of chronic conditions. And it's interesting because, of course, this research started with what's happening. Researchers were looking at a large cohort, a longitudinal study, and they found that children who had experienced 10 different types of adverse childhood experiences were extremely likely to develop a range of chronic conditions, physical and mental, in adulthood. But then the question is, why is it happening? And it's really just in the past 5 to 10 years that we've been able to see what's happening in the brain. There are so many things happening at the same time. So we know now that not only are these changes happening epigenetically, but also the connections in the brain between really important centers that need to communicate, the neural connections between the amygdala or fear center, the hippocampus, which tells us all of our histories of memories is what's happening, okay or not okay. The prefrontal cortex, these connections are going down. And that's a really big deal. The good news, and we'll get to that, is that some of this is changeable.
Yes, this book does have a potentially happy ending. We will get to that. You mentioned, again, adverse childhood experiences. I think it's time to take a look at this set of clinical criteria that's put together by researchers. Talk about what's on this list. You know, Adam, you had a very good suggestion. Maybe we'll do that now, actually, to maybe give folks this test on the air. It's a list of 10 criteria, 10. It's sort of a questionnaire. But first, maybe, Donna, talk about how this thing is used as a diagnostic tool.
So it began actually in 1995, which is incredible to think that we have been doing this research for so long and it's still not part of mainstream medicine. But it began with researchers, two very prescient researchers, one at Kaiser Permanente and one at the CDC. And they wanted to see whether or not chronic stress in childhood led to a greater likelihood of disease. So they looked at 17,000 individuals, and they tacked on these 10 questions to that paperwork that we all fill out when we go to a doctor's office. They ran the study, and it turned out that 64% of average middle class, fairly comfortable Americans had suffered one or more adverse childhood experience. 40% had suffered two or more, and 12.5% had suffered four or more. So then they ran these numbers against their health histories and tried to see what is the correlation between this early stress and later adult disease. And
it's hard to put enough of an exclamation point on what they discovered, the revelation. I mean, you write in your book, it made one of the researchers started weeping
when he
saw what was going on.
He's Robert Anda from the CDC said, "I saw how much human suffering exists out there, and I wept. So we all have this understanding that, yes, you know, different things that happen in childhood would, of course, lead to more emotional issues in adulthood. What's new here is that they lead to physical issues in adulthood.
Let's pause there and take a minute to administer this questionnaire. Yeah?
Yeah.
Listeners, if you're tuned in, have a listen here. Assess your own memories of your own childhood. Think about your health. And, you know, it may or may not be coincidence that those two are in some way connected. Adam, I'll turn it over to you.
So it's worth grabbing a piece of paper and a pencil, and you're just going to give yourself a score of one if this incident has happened to you. You're not going to give yourself multiple numbers if it's happened to you more than once in your lifetime, but giving yourself a score of one if you answer yes to any of the following questions. One, did a parent, and this is all before your 18th birthday, did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one. Number two, did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you, or ever hit you so hard that you had marks or were injured? Again, if the answer is yes, give yourself a one. Did an adult or a person at least 5 years older than you ever touch or fondle you, or have you touch their body in a sexual way? Or attempt or actually have oral, anal, or vaginal intercourse with you? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one. Number four, did you often or very often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special? Or your family didn't look out for each other or feel close to each other or support each other? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one. Number five, did you often or very often feel that you did not have enough to eat or had to wear dirty clothes, or had no one to protect you, or your parents were too drunk or too high to take care of you or take you to the doctor if you needed it? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one.
I'm going to interrupt here in case folks are just tuning in and hearing this list. Yes, you are tuned to Midday, and you're listening to the ACE, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Questionnaire. Go ahead, Adam.
Number six, was a biological parent ever lost to you through divorce, abandonment, or other reason? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one. Number seven, was your mother or stepmother often or very often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her? Or sometimes often or very often kicked, bitten, hit with a fist, or hit with something hard? Or ever repeatedly hit over at least a few minutes or threatened with a gun or a knife? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one. Number eight, did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker or alcoholic or used street drugs? Again, if the answer is yes, give yourself a one. Number nine, was a household member depressed or mentally ill, or did a household member attempt suicide? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one. And finally, number 10, did a household member go to prison? If the answer is yes, give yourself a one. You'll then add up these scores, these numbers, and that's your ACE score, Aaron.
The ACE, again, meaning Adverse Childhood Experiences. That's Adam Rosenberg reading, you know, a rather depressing questionnaire that has, as you heard Donna mention, really startling and sort of depressing results as well. I mean, the numbers on those assessments were really surprisingly high.
Well, I think that's the comforting part that Donna mentioned, too, that, look, 64% of people who were surveyed had at least one of these ACEs. ACEs right. are very common, and I think it's important to recognize that they're out there, and we need to be able to build these systems so we can respond to these.
There you go. Listeners, you heard the assessment there. You're welcome to join the conversation with your experiences and your questions. 410-662-8780. And Donna Jackson Nakazawa, are folks with adults with this history just doubly cursed then? Are they fated to have not only miserable childhoods, but then this lifetime of physical ill health as a result?
Not at all. First of all, the statistics are a little overwhelming. And I have to say, even in writing and researching the book for 2 years, I couldn't wait to get to the repairs and the ways that we can reverse these epigenetic changes. But first, let's look a little bit at the statistics. So the number of ACEs, so as Adam said, your ACE score, the number of ACEs that a patient faced before the age of 18 predicted how much medical care they would require in adulthood. People with 4 ACEs were twice as likely to be diagnosed with cancer than those with a score of 0. Women with 3 ACEs have a 60% higher chance of being hospitalized with a serious autoimmune disease. And perhaps most shocking, an ACE score of 6 shortens an individual's lifespan by 20 years. So that's really significant. Now, as far as being doomed, a couple of things I want to make clear. First of all disease is multifactorial. There are many other things that can go into developing disease and protecting against it. And one thing that we are understanding more and more in the literature, and Adam might want to speak to this, it's so important that the most protective factor that we see in kids is that they have one reliable adult to help them make sense of whatever stressor is occurring in their lives. And also that over the long term, it's not a secret. So those are two really reassuring things to remember in children's lives. But we also understand now, and we can see that those same epigenetics that I talked about in the beginning, that we can reverse those epigenetic changes and we can begin to regrow some of that neural wiring in the brain so that people can return to a less, call it, inflammatory or disease-prone state. So there is really good news. And I followed 13 individuals for 2 years to show how that was possible.
Adam, I'm going to let you pick up where Donna has left off in just a moment. That's science writer Donna Jackson Nakazawa. She's author of Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology, and How You Can Heal. Listeners, you're most welcome to join this conversation, too. Is your biography dictating your biology? Are you struggling with the long-term effects of adverse childhood experiences? What has stress done to your health? What are you doing to heal? Your stories, your experiences, and your questions are welcome at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin, in for Sheila Cast. 410-662-8780, the number to call to join the conversation here as we talk with science writer Donna Jackson Nakazawa about her book, Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology and How You Can Heal. Donna's here in studio with us, along with Adam Rosenberg, executive director of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center. Adam is a former prosecutor in the Domestic Violence Unit of the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office, and he served on the Governor's Council on Child Abuse and Neglect. Adam, let me have you respond to what you've heard from Donna this hour. How does her research resonate with your daily on-the-ground experience working with families and kids here in Baltimore?
I think we see it play out every day. We see about 1,000 kids a year at Baltimore Child Abuse Center, children who have been suspected of being these victims of abuse, kids going into foster care, kids who've witnessed something traumatic there. And we're seeing it play out at a number of levels. Besides the children themselves who are coming in with that one ace, they've been a victim of sexual abuse, physical abuse, witnessed the domestic violence. We're also seeing it in their parents and their caregivers. These are people who have been living with these aces for their generation, and many of them haven't necessarily done anything about it there, whether they've self-medicated through alcohol or drugs, or they've done their best to cope with it. We're trying to urge families to be able to begin to address these issues, not just with their children, but with themselves. And the excellent point that Donna made, that at least if there's one solid caregiver who can provide that guidance for that child to help them get past this, then by no means is an ACE a death sentence. But it's a marker and an indicator that we need to be doing something proactive about this, that we just can't repress the fact that a child was a victim of abuse or saw something traumatic, but need to be able to put measures in place to make sure, A, it doesn't happen again, and B, that we can get these kids and these families the help that they need. And that all too often isn't happening.
410-662-8780. We're going to go to the phones now and take some calls from you, our listeners, and we'll begin with April in Baltimore. April, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if you could tell me what you think about the possibility that perhaps the trauma of slavery, is there a connection with, you know, like heightened hypertension and heart disease in the African-American community because of these ACEs and the possible genetic changes that happen due to them?
Really interesting question. April, taking a historical look at your theory here and wondering if, you know, something that happened centuries ago has had, an extremely long tail of damage.
Well, it's interesting. In the original ACE study, they did not include community violence, poverty, or having a background that in which there had been abuse in prior generations. But I can't speak to that exactly because we don't have the exact research on that. But what we do know is that these changes in how the stress response will enact itself in your body, that we do understand that these are intergenerational. So for two reasons, just what Adam mentioned, that when parents have been under a great deal of stress, none of us are at our best under stress, and households can be more stressful. So I'm speaking in just general terms for all people, and we know that biologically that stress can be inherited. For instance, a really fascinating set of studies came out this year looking at how the egg is carrying soft-wired changes in the DNA in a mother that was stressed pre-conception. Now, a study just came out 2 weeks ago showing that this is also true for male sperm. Changes in the DNA in male sperm obviously pre-conception. So the caller is asking a really important question for any group where there has been a lot of intergenerational trauma. And we do see some of these changes happening across generations for both behavioral and biological reasons.
Yeah, there's interesting work coming out that's sort of taking the 20 years of ACE work and relating it to what's happening today. And some remarkable work has come out of Philadelphia where they've begun to establish essentially some additional urban ACEs, which was what Donna was talking about. You've got kids who are living with not post-traumatic stress, but constant traumatic stress disorders, you know, witnessing the daily gun violence and violence that's occurring in their neighborhoods. It's what we see in Baltimore all the time. The incidents in April related to Freddie Gray was not an abnormality, but you know, in some ways was what's happening in many communities across the city, and it was that wake-up call that kids are seeing this on that regular basis. And what we're finding is, what they found in Philadelphia, was that those have the same level of impact as the other ACEs there.
Absolutely.
So if you're seeing these things, you're impacted by that stress as well.
Back to the phones here on Midday, 410-662-8780. And we go now to Omar in White Marsh. Omar, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm glad to hear this on the station. The developmental origins of adult disease, the model is called DOHAD, has been established for some time. And the answer to April's question is already in the literature. There is some articles in the American Journal of Human Biology that talk about the issue of when will the epigenetic marks be removed due to the experience of Jim Crow slavery oppression on Afro-North Americans. And so this can actually be looked up right now. This is not a new thing. I'm a physician and a biological anthropologist. What I wanted to do is comment on that work in Philadelphia specifically about the fact that a sense of deep deprivation in children actually affects cognitive ability, specifically frontal lobe areas and language acquisition. The Ferrer group, Dr. Ferrer at the University of Pennsylvania, has shown this. And so the issue of both effects on cognition as well as physical health has been well established. There are many different developmental pathways. I do warn you about being careful about how you talk about DNA. What we're talking about is altered gene expression, not changes in DNA sequences. And this is a very important point. But it's good to hear that you are talking about this on the radio, because the whole issue of chronic stress via racism and a sense of not belonging, etc., has affected an entire community. And while you can talk about other communities all you want, the specific trauma on Afro-North Americans is very well known and an ongoing issue. And you have these events of eruptions of you know, things that happen, but the daily stress of life and sense of perception, even when people tried their best, is still an issue in this society. And so the question of its health effects and its cognitive effects is something that has not been well integrated into health disparities discussions. It has not been integrated into health policy discussions. We know that the trauma that you talk about in terms of direct trauma, sexual abuse, et cetera, on a child, physical abuse, will actually decrease their brain volume. We know children in war zones, it will decrease their brain volume. You take the stress and trauma away, and you get, based on MRI studies, a re-increase in the appropriate brain volume. So the ongoing daily oppression is an issue that affects health and needs to be written into public policy. Yes, it will cost a lot, but I don't hear anybody, Democrat, Republican, Social Democrats, Democratic Socialists, anybody talking about these effects.
So if you want to learn a little bit more about that, too, there is a remarkable series out called The Raising of America. If you Google raisingofamerica.org, they're showing the series for free, and episode 4 talks about America's wounded cities and these issues there. And we've got a copy of this that will be showing up at Baltimore Child Abuse Center in the early 2016. It's worth watching because it goes into this, and it's really one of the first times we've examined it there.
Omar in White Marsh, thanks so much for your call. Appreciate you taking the time to call in and share your insight. 410-662-8780, the number to call to join the conversation. And let me ask, if I might, in order for any kind of healing to happen, it seems like our healthcare system, and you heard Omar allude to this, is going to need to do a pretty major overhaul of its practices and basic kind of like cultural underpinning. I mean, doctors are sort of by nature focused on tangible physical symptoms, right? And then equally physical cures. How does that begin to change?
Well, one of the things that we're seeing is there is a great deal of community change, which is so essential and important looking at the lives of children. Great funding coming through for, Philadelphia is now an ACE aware city, the work that Adam is doing. What is not happening is that adult medicine is not changing. So we have the beginnings of a movement after 20 years of research for children, and this is so important, and it's the most important place to begin. But we also aren't catching the adults who take care of the children. We aren't catching the adults who raise the children, because primary care medicine has turned a blind eye to this for 20 years. And there are many reasons for that. Healthcare is incentivized by seeing patients quickly and getting lots of tests. It is not incentivized by spending an extra 5 or 10 minutes asking patients about this questionnaire. And very few medical schools are even teaching this. So there are going to have to be some big changes in healthcare so that we can catch the trauma that has wrought havoc on an adult body for oh so many years, and begin to set in place the things that will help to reverse those epigenetic expressions within that person's body. But we're a long way from doing it.
What are some of the more progressive therapies that are out there that are being used to relieve, this chemical damage that's been done to these stressed out brains?
Well, luckily, there are quite a few. I would start, and I'm sure Adam would agree, really with parenting and parents managing their own stuff and becoming aware of their own ACEs. In fact, some research has shown simply taking the ACE survey and showing it to your doctor reduces people's numbers of future healthcare visits, because the aha moment that, you know, this is me, this is why I've been swimming against this seemingly impossible tide for so long, helps relieve, but also allows people to kind of wake up on their own side and begin those methods that can help reverse. Most researched is meditation and mindfulness-based stress reduction. And we know, for instance, that teachers who work with kids who have ACEs, who have gone through mindfulness courses, they are better able to help those kids because they're managing their own stuff. So mindfulness meditation has been shown to be very, very useful. Some newer therapies, including EMDR therapy, which looks at past trauma.
EMDR, that's eye movement.
It is, you know, and I looked into that and I really wasn't sure about it. But, you know, it's turning out that it helps to replicate some of what happens during sleep, which is where we wash away a lot of trauma. And the World Health Organization is using it as only one of two methodologies around the world to deal with kids in war situations. Other things, somatic experiencing by the great Peter Levine, to be able to teach kids and adults to go back into their bodies and experience the full experience of what happened, but safely, and let it kind of be resolved that way therapeutically. All kinds of things are beginning to show a profound effect on that epigenetic expression, neurofeedback. Even yoga is helping people to produce sort of anti-inflammatories that are helpful. So some of these things are right for some people and not for others. And I covered about 30 of them in the book, and every person I followed for 2 years came up with what you might think of as a smorgasbord of the things that really worked for them. And they're in a different place. They took their healing in their own hands.
You know, and I'd say that the list that Donna talks about, you know, is the fact that we're doing something versus doing nothing. And I think there's a lot of people who – look, you've got listeners right now who went through this ACE assessment and, you know, are astonished at their number, that they have 6 of 10, they have 8 of 10. And it doesn't mean that – it's not a death sentence and doesn't mean you're doomed. It means that you have to be able to start doing something to be able to build that resiliency and reverse those effects. And even more so, as we discover children who've had these ACEs, we need to be able to direct them into those interventions as well. Certainly one of the best ones is cognitive behavioral therapeutic interventions there, finding the ones that can help them work with those issues internally there, and then remove the factors if they're there as well.
And one really important thing to add here is that often kids who have suffered from ACEs, they are the very adults who have trouble waking up on their own side and taking care of themselves. Often, you know, there's a greater association to poor self-care. So the very things that help to reverse those epigenetic expressions of high stress response and high inflammation, it's harder for people who don't feel they deserve to be well to pick up the practices and go to the doctor and take this survey and begin to incorporate the behavioral health changes that can help
you
them.
Raise such a great point, because I think that often we see families who feel that they don't deserve it.
That's right.
That therapy is a luxury, whether it's a luxury that they can't afford or a luxury that they don't deserve. And the reality is that one of the great things with the Affordable Care Act is that we've made, certainly in Maryland, health insurance is available for every child. And we can get these children to those right screenings, those right therapeutic interventions at an earlier stage.
That's
so we can
right.
begin addressing that, because the lifetime of trauma costs the American taxpayer billions of dollars a year of lost worker productivity, sick days, increased health costs. It costs Maryland $1.5 billion. I mean, imagine, Aaron, what we could do if we had that money back in there.
You're tuned to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin, here with science writer Donna Jackson Nakazawa, author of Childhood Disrupted, and Adam Rosenberg, executive director of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center. Big question for you guys to ponder as we go into a break. We'll tackle it when we get back. We've just talked about how adults can begin to heal their minds and reduce these stress-induced inflammations that result in all these physical health problems. But let's take it a step further now and talk about how adults can then make sure that they avoid being the kinds of parents that induce that stress on kids in the first place. You know, how true is it that kids who were abused and neglected grow up and go on to do the same thing to their own kids? And what do you have to do to break out of that cycle? We'll answer that question. We'll take your calls at 410-662-8780 after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin, in for Sheila Cast. We've got calls coming in at 410-662-8780. Listeners, I guarantee we're going to get to you shortly, but I promised an answer to a question before our last break. How do folks avoid being the kinds of parents that induce such stress on children in the first place? And Donna Jackson Nakazawa, I'm gonna let you begin, and then Adam Rosenberg will turn to you.
Well, I think that I'm going to really address on an individual level because, of course, we know through the research that parents who grew up with their own ACEs are more likely, for behavioral reasons, to reproduce that behavior. First of all, it's what they learned at their parents' knee. And it is also much more likely that they have undergone those epigenetic shifts in the expression of genes that make them more stress reactive, right? So they have, let's say, fewer tools in the toolbox for two reasons. Little things are going to make them more likely to fly, and then they don't have the skills and tools to deal with that. So really the most important thing that we can ask parents to do is to look at their own stuff, manage their own baggage. Parents who have looked at their ACEs and handled their ACEs become better parents. Now, we're all going to make mistakes. I have two teenagers. We all make mistakes. We say or do the wrong thing at the wrong moment. What's really interesting is that we can look at the brain and we can see that kids who feel really afraid when mom or dad have lost it, and they do, because imagine biologically as a child, you want to run to your parent, right? Because they should help you. But if your parent is scary, you cannot run to your parent and away from your parent at the same time. So the brain goes into freeze and all these changes that we talked about begin to happen. So what can ameliorate that right in the minute? Make a repair. You make a mistake, you make a repair. Hey, that must have been really scary for you. I didn't manage myself very well there. I'm really sorry. I love you very much. And you may not break your curfew. That's the kind of thing that parents need to be doing more of. And if they don't feel that they have the help that they need to get the support that they need to provide a safe environment for their children so their kids feel safe and secure and seen and nurtured. It doesn't mean doing everything perfectly in every minute. And I lay out 12 steps in the book for helping parents, but that's the very beginning.
That's Donna Jackson Nakazawa. She's a health and science writer. Her new book is titled Childhood Disrupted: How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology and How You Can Heal. And Adam Rosenberg, head of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center, we turn to you now with your thoughts.
We have a remarkable staff at Baltimore Child Abuse Center. They're available 24 hours a day to respond when these incidents and cases come up. And I think that to pick up where Donna left off is, how do we build trauma-informed communities so that the youth organizations that we're sending our kids to, schools, after-school programs, churches, synagogues, et cetera, are able to respond to these things when they come up, and rather than hide and cower away from them, and that we can build a safer environment both for our kids so that incidents of abuse don't happen at those programs, and we go out and do a voluminous amount of trainings to prevent it from happening there, but also that when program administrators, counselors, teachers, coaches discover that there's a child who's had one of these stressors, had one of these ACEs, that we can respond to it appropriately and begin to put those measures in place. I think we've lived too long with it being secrets and shameful, and we need to be able to recognize that these things have happened, and like cancer or a broken bone, we need to be able to take proactive measures and do something about it. 87% of people who've had one ACE are more likely to have more than one ACE there. So these things aren't occurring in a vacuum. And so when one ACE occurs, some form of household dysfunction, abuse or neglect of the child there, this kid's more at risk of another thing happening. And the community just needs to be able to gird up and protect that child.
410-662-8780. We turn to the phones now and hear from Eric in Northeast Baltimore. Eric, you're on Midday.
Hi, Aaron. Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually, what you've all just said is what I wanted to ask about, namely how one can what kinds of studies have been done to show the epigenetic effects of on people who afflict others with such suffering.
Hmm. Interesting. Eric's question is there something that changes in the brain or that's different in the brain of someone who is an abuser?
What I know about the research looks at it more intergenerationally, looking at the likelihood of someone having a lack of the skills and tools because they grew up under an abusive situation, and that makes them more likely to become someone who is not regulating their behavior. And yes, so therefore you could say that a parent who is abusive is more likely to have a lack of regulation in the areas of the brain that would lead to better parenting. So I would assume that that is true, but the studies that I really researched and covered looked at it intergenerationally with a trickle-down effect. I don't know of studies at this moment that look at abusers outside of the context of their own history. And I think that that would be very difficult to do, if that makes sense.
But what we do know is that there's increased incidence of people who were victims of abuse as children either committing abuse as an adult or being a victim again. Their victimology increases dramatically.
Back to the phones at 410-662-8780. And Tricia in Laurel, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. I was just speaking to the young lady, and I was just telling her one of the things that happened to me when I was young. I was about 11 years old, and I almost got raped and almost killed, really. And on top of that, there was a lot of fighting going on in the house, and I really always felt like my mom didn't like me, but my father was, you know, was a drinker and always fighting her. So I always felt on the outside, you know, I felt like I just didn't belong in the family or whatever. So I stayed to myself a lot. But I've learned that I like what the lady is saying because, you know, you just have to put a lot of positive things in your life. I will be 65 years old, and I still have those little feelings of distrusting people and, you know, things like that. So I've gotten a lot better with that. You know, I was a pretty smart kid, but I never really accomplished the things I really wanted to do until I got older. And so I'm really glad we're having this conversation because it pops up a lot. And then I look at my daughter, who is 47, who has a lot of trust issues at this point.
Tricia, you say you're 65 now, Tricia?
You'd be 65 soon, yeah.
Question for you. How is your health?
Well, it's good because I've changed, like she said. I've changed the way I eat. I changed the way I think. I changed the stress out of my life. You know, it's a lot of work, but I've done it, and I don't think I've been able to live this long if I had not, you know, changed the way I think and have a positive attitude and be around people. And then I was had the opportunity to go to a couple of groups to talk to people and give a lot of things out, which I know the young lady's probably going to say is good to really talk to people and get things out because that makes you sick, too, when you don't talk mm-hmm. to people and get things out. And I still have a little problem with, you know, getting things out when something happens to me.
Yeah.
And like she said, you really just freeze. I was on my way to church the other day, and this dog came up behind me, and I just froze.
Yeah.
But because of the tactics of what I've learned to do, fear didn't come within me because of the spiritual tactics that I've been using. I just looked away and walked away, and the dog dropped the frisbee and walked away from me. So I don't know. it was fearful, but...
But that's typical, though. That's that trauma response kicking in, that a car backfiring, a dog barking, that something happens, and that's causing that whole HPA response to happen there. And Tricia, you know, I really appreciate your sharing what you've had to say and what's happened to you, because you're not alone in this there. I mean, it sounds like, you know, just adding up what you've shared with us, you've got at least a 5 out of 10 with these ACEs there. And there's a lot of people who've had that, but fortunately it sounds like you've put the pieces in place to be able to maintain your healthiness, but that doesn't diminish what happened to you in the past there. And I think that hopefully as people hear this, they're beginning to figure out what they need to be able to do to work towards repairing themselves and keeping healthy. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Tricia, and thanks for sharing your story. We're going to go back to the phones now, 410-662-8780, and let's hear from Robert in Frederick. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Bob here. I really appreciate your conversation. I do want to go back to the point of how sometimes these can be repeated generation after generation.
Robert, I'm going to interrupt you for just a sec. Are you on speakerphone or in a loud room somewhere?
I was in the vehicle, but I've now pulled over to the side.
Oh, good.
Side.
All right. Oh, good. That for your safety.
We heard
okay,
you
go ahead.
Now.
Please continue, Bob.
Yeah. I'm talking about a father who was, you know, in prison, federal, when I was 3. The abuse lasted till about the 3rd grade, and then a change of life situation. What came out of all this, though, was I think it was community groups like faith community and scouting that made a profound difference. There were people alert, that were sensitive, that gave a helping hand. It helped me find a better trajectory. I was able to do later on research in my family, and I found out this patterns went back 3-4 generations, some of it even tied to military PTSD. But in my own pathway, I've continued to seek out health and growth, and subsequently had entered a profession that I could help others, going on for bachelor's, master's, and doctorate, and continue to do so because those people had helped me, and in turn, I can help others.
Bob, I want to thank you very much for your call. It sounds like Bob is saying, you know, get into a larger family, an extended family, whether it's the church, whether it's Boy Scouts, reap the benefits of some grown-ups who are going to be positive in your life.
Well, 2 points I want to make, Aaron. One is that both of our callers have talked about the importance of the recognition within themselves that this abuse was wrong. They weren't responsible for it. They weren't going to keep it secret. And they were going to begin to care for themselves on whatever trajectory that meant, whether it was personal intervention or, for this caller, you know, going out into the community and finding a space in which he felt safe. And the second point is that we understand that healing happens better in communities. So for people who have not been safe as children, having a community in which they can join together and feel safe can restructure the family that they never had, and it can be a very healing experience.
We are just about out of time. I want to apologize to the calls and emails we didn't get to this hour, and I want to say thank you to Donna Jackson Nakazawa, author of the book Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology and How You Can Heal. Also, thanks to Adam Rosenberg, head of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center here in Baltimore City. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want more information on the clinical checklist of adverse childhood experiences, we'll put up some links on the midday page at WYPR.org. I want to say thank you to Eddie's Roland Park for supplying lunch to our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features sandwiches and salad specials each day. It's all on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. A special thanks and fond farewell today to midday producer Melody Simmons. Keep an eye out for Melody's byline in the Baltimore Business Journal. She's headed over there to take on a full-time reporting position. We wish her all the best. Thank you, Melody, and good luck. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Tomorrow on Midday, a listen back to Sheila Cast's conversation with Margaret Williams of the Maryland Family Network. For Sheila Cast and 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station, I'm Aaron Henkin. Thanks for listening.